Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
This week, we're going to talk about the care and feeding of developers. John, I believe you came up with this topic. Why don't you give us kind of a lead and tell us what that's all about?
Sure. So the old stereotype of the pale programmer in the corner is going away, right? Those in the developer role are becoming more diverse and more varied. So we kind of need to adjust our mindset with dealing with developers. Having been a developer professionally for the last 18 or so years, I've seen my fair share of trends on how companies deal with developers and how developers deal with a variety of different companies. So actually, I wanted to kind of open it up to you guys and see what are your thoughts and ideas of the software development experience, either historically or as it sits today.
So what do you mean by developers are becoming more, the roles are becoming more diverse and varied? Could you elaborate a little bit more?
Yeah, so the old stereotype was the developer sitting in a corner, you just deliver maybe a big monolithic functional specification document to them. Throw some pizza and sodas in a room, lock them in there for a month or two, and then at the end of the process, you'll come out with some kind of working software. They were historically introverts, maybe a little unkept, unclean, unshaven. Look at the screen now on our video and see that we're mostly unshaven right now, but we're getting a little bit more varied, a little bit more diverse. We've got people that aren't necessarily introverts anymore, people that aren't necessarily the old stereotypical developer. It's becoming a little bit more inclusive and welcoming of people from different backgrounds, different ethnicities and genders. So it's no longer that same role that it was many years ago.
Now, do you think that is because maybe solely because of diversity, or that we found better ways of getting work out of people in general?
Well, I think maybe it's just the way things are. I mean, nothing really stays the same. So we're constantly making advancements. Hopefully we're making improvements. We're learning from our experiences. We're learning from mistakes. So we're figuring out better ways to make software. We're figuring out better ways to deliver value. Many years ago, assembly lines were the way to make products. And the kind of the advent of the Toyota process and lean manufacturing really did a number on that industry. And so we're taking, we have historically kind of taken those ideas and migrated them over to software development. And I think, we're at a weird transition of how do we deliver that software and how do we, as a team, deliver value.
Before you mentioned the Toyota, I was going to say it sounds kind of like an evolution caused by the industry moving towards agile. Waterfall is kind of somebody defines some stuff, they hand it to the developers make something, they hand it to QA make sure that it works, and then it goes out the door. And agile, the team gets a lot more involved, the developers do, to the point of even going, oh well, we're not going to accept those requirements, or feeding estimates back to the company so the company can make good decisions.
I think it's also kind of thinking of things versus, small batch versus large batch processes. So are we just going to hand off this whole we want the whole application written, you know, so here you go, just and go, you know, do whatever you need to do until it gets done? Or are we going to break up into little pieces and have different people work on things in various ways? And in some ways, I've actually seen places where that small batch has gotten so boiled down, especially in like very large organizations, where actually they had sort of gone the route of, you know, separating everyone out and, you know, everyone has their role that they're playing and, you know, accommodating. You're almost so diversified, you're almost so spread out that they're actually finding coming back in and saying, hey, let's let you three get together and work on this one thing. And we're just going to isolate you away from the group and let you just guys go in and do it. We're going to get some value out of that. So it's kind of even, I would even say that in some ways, some places have gone all the way out where it's feathered completely out, where it's and sort of bricked out where everyone does it. And then people are saying, hey, maybe we're doing too much of that and coming back the other direction.
Yeah, I've heard it described more like a pendulum, but I equate it more to like a rubber band. You know, a rubber band you can stretch out so far, and then it's going to snap back in a little bit, but it's going to find that happy place where it wants to be at rest. And that's really the sweet spot where I think we might, you know, want to be as an industry. You know, kind of gone are the days where we were just delivering something based on a you know, 1,000-page document, right? We're not just bricklayers. We're builders. We're software developers. We're software engineers. We're architects. We have insights. We have our own experiences that we can contribute to the greater good of the project, for the company. You know, when documents used to be delivered many years ago, you know, it was a foregone conclusion that this is what you are to build. You know, flaws and all, whether it hits the mark, whether it actually delivers the value, whether it meets the goals that were stated at the beginning of the project. You know, now I think we're learning as we go. We're figuring out that we can deliver small pieces of value, learn from it, and iterate on that, and continue to evolve software systems.
I think maybe the developers are getting there. My experience with companies is that at some point there was this process called waterfall, and it was supposedly very rigid, and all the documentation and all the requirements were defined up front, and then they were just passed down the chain. And then companies heard about this wonderful thing called Agile that meant that they didn't have to plan for anything. And so then they stopped creating requirements altogether, and they told the business analysts that were doing waterfall to instead just jump. And the business analysts, since they didn't know what to do with that kind of direction, they were just like, okay. And so then the business analysts tell the developers, I don't know, we were told to jump, so jump. And the developers go, okay, I guess. Is this Agile? Okay, we'll do whatever. I'm getting a paycheck. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. I'm here for 8 hours a day. It's whatever.
Yeah, those are some of my favorite Dilbert cartoons.
Well, the problem with that, and you guys kind of highlighted it, and it's an analog that's existed in many, many things, is when a new process or a new thing comes along, people tend to take it completely to the extremes. So like if you look at typography, right? So early in the Roman era, it was literally just make this symbol, and that symbol means a thing. And then you move forward to like the Middle Ages, and the letters in the books from the Middle Ages, they were transcribed by the monks and whatnot, they are crazy complicated. And then now we've dialed it back, and we've landed on Comic Sans, and that's just what everybody uses.
No Comic Sans, just say no.
Oh, no, we don't. Okay.
Of course, now they're not teaching cursive either, so.
Yeah. Typography in general is coming back to slightly more elevated from what it originally was, but a lot more dialed back from the crazy complicated stuff, except for in situations where we intend to be decorative. I think the same thing is going to have to happen with software development. There was just such a hard transition from all the requirements up front, spending years figuring it out, to jumping out of the fifth story window, that I don't know how long it's going to take for businesses to come back to something that makes sense, you know? And I think the developers and the QA and the BAs are going to suffer for a long time for just the abandonment of all information. I mean, it's like when they sacked the library at Alexandria, like just everything's gone.
Yeah, I think we've all had our share of a variety of different experiences, both good and bad, in software projects. I know I worked on a rather large project that was going quite poorly, to be honest. And, you know, after a year into it or so, you know, all the developers were brought into a room and you know, there was a kind of a gripe session, and said, well, you know, we're here. And upper management said, you know, we're here because when we started this project, we didn't have anybody on staff that had any Azure experience. And then more than a handful of hands went up in the room and said, but I have Azure experience. I had Azure experience when I started. You know, I've been working in Azure for years. But, you know, it seems like a lot of these projects and Agile projects in particular, you know, they got the idea that we can go faster with Agile, and sadly, at the expense of documentation and planning and requirements gathering. So we just go a million miles an hour with our hair on fire, and we don't slow down to really think about what we're doing. We don't slow down to think about the value that we're trying to deliver. And we don't actually participate in the retrospectives where we learn from our past mistakes of the most immediate sprint and the sprints before. You know, I think there's a lot of information and a lot of value in the processes and procedure mostly associated with Agile, but we need to take the time to learn those lessons. We need to slow down, and we need to deliver that value.
If we focus on speed, right? If we focus on going as fast as possible, and we don't follow the disciplines that are going to help us go well, then we're just going to make a mess faster. And that will make it more impossible and more difficult for us to even move faster. So it actually adds friction. So you're going to add processes to reduce friction, to reduce, enable those things, you know, developers to move faster, requirements to be pushed out, all of those sorts of things. But then the mess that gets made is going to bring about an environment which makes it more difficult to deliver the value, you know, from the beginning. So yeah, I think Uncle Bob says it. In order to go fast, you have to go well.
Yeah, and instead we're dumping nitrous into a Ford Taurus or a Gremlin or something. So it's like the car barely runs on its own, and then we're gonna try and take it around the racetrack a few times.
Yeah, and that is, you know, that isn't to say that developers don't have a role to play in this. You know, we need to take the ownership and pull on the Anton cord or raise our hand and say, this isn't right. We don't have enough information to start. We didn't learn the value that we delivered. We don't have the metrics in place. We don't have the information back from our last release. These are the types of things that we need to say, stop, wait, I need more information to do a better job, because I don't want to sacrifice quality at the expense of delivering points, right? Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that I'm actually helping my client, helping my company, helping my team, and helping the teams around me, because I don't want to just pawn off, well, you know, we delivered stuff and put it into the QA bucket and now it's their problem.
Yeah, we got stories done. We made points. The points don't actually mean anything, and the stories didn't have value to start with, but
well, it's like a Drew Carey show. Yeah, so how do we go about that more? You know, we can't necessarily change others' opinions, thoughts, behaviors, but we can give them more information and maybe be more expressive and say, if you allow us this time to do good work, then we won't have to spend time doing rework later, because most of the expense in software is going to be in maintenance.
Yeah, this is something that I struggle with probably at every job. So working with a developer, I'm a developer, so it's not terribly difficult to discuss better ways of doing something with a developer. You know, they give me a few pointers, I give them a few pointers, And at the end of it, we both learned something. But when it comes to the business, well, I'm just a developer. What do I know about business process or requirements, right? So even though I've read quite a few books and I've done a lot of studying and thinking about requirements and some of the process flow for all, you know, a business project, I don't have that gateway of trust. Like there's no path immediately for me to discuss with a business analyst or a product owner or stakeholder about making things better. And I'm not the best communicator. I think you both know that. So how do you go about earning that position of trust so that you can discuss those things? Because I think if the other developers that listen to this podcast are struggling with the same thing that I'm struggling with, then they might be able to benefit from maybe some hints or tips for speaking with the business better.
Yeah. So I think first off, there are different businesses and different, like every business is different, right? Every situation some are more open already. So you might find that it's just easier to go to approach them and ask about these things. They may be even looking for ways to improve things and frustrated with the lack of communication and feeling like there's bottlenecks between the developers and the business itself. That's definitely a possibility that you have already people looking for that to exist. But I think the biggest issue in this role is we as the developers, we often will not sort of take ownership of ourselves and get our own sort of do the right things for, you know, ourselves first. And I think that in as a whole, this kind of causes a problem, especially when you begin to say, hey, you know, we would like you to change your ways and we'd like you to get better, you know, in the way that you deal with us when we're not fully consistent. And I think like a lot of those are one specific area where we can kind of talk about this is, you know, when we're talking about, hey, well, we need more time to get this, you know, certain quality level, right? Well, is that gold plating that you're doing, or are you, you know, is this something that you're, is this utilitarian in the way that you're writing it, or are you doing something that you're sort of going into, you know, blowing up the story and you know, doing more work in order to sort of just, you know, do something that's what you want to do, or is this what's necessary, or, you know, so a lot of times I think like we, and this is sort of we as a collective whole, right, can kind of lose our credibility because instead of for sort of following the consistent response and sort of taking ownership and doing things the right way when it's the right way and refusing to do things the wrong way, so always sort of being consistent in that manner. But then on the other on the flip side, we'll sometimes do things just because we want to do them and say, oh, this is very interesting to me. And then the business goes, well, wait a second. Is this actually really necessary? Is this needed? And you try to find some way to convince them, yeah, this is needed, or, you know, I want this. And as it turns out later, you were just wasting the time. And so they go, well, can I trust you? Can I not trust you? And there's sort of that I think creates a very difficult relationship to be able to sort of form that trust bond.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a very interesting conundrum there. You know, I try to be open and honest by default, right? But there are certain things that as I'm developing something that is my preferred way to write software. I prefer to do test-driven development. I prefer to put in logging and collect telemetry data. And that's not something that I'm, you know, broadcasting to others on my team or to the business or to the clients for that matter. But it's just a way that I am ensuring that I am delivering quality because if you know, I've worked on projects before where they've tried to veto unit tests and test projects and said, you know, the software needs to be tested. The software will be tested. We can either automate that and write that in from the very beginning, or you can pay somebody to do it multiple times over and over and over again, right? So I'm going to do what I need to do to make sure that I'm delivering quality. As I deliver quality, if it's a new team or a new project that I'm on, if it's replacing software that's been in existence, I want to make sure that I'm replacing it with something that is better, that provides more value, that is easier to use for the employees or the customers or whoever's using that. I just finished up a internal project for another company where, you know, we were replacing a number of access databases. So I you know, got the opportunity to meet with a couple of users and say, you know, we're replacing this with a web-enabled application. Want to get your feedback, get the feedback from the user, show them the data that we've collected with the telemetry and the logging, and say, you know, before this process was taking you 10 very manual, frustrating minutes to get done with this antiquated access database. Now you're done in a matter of seconds in what, maybe 6 clicks. And many of the users would come over to us and say, you know, thank you for doing this. This is a dream to use. You know, deliver a couple of projects like that or a couple of features like that, and then be honest with the higher ups or the powers that be and say, you know what? There's something I'm really interested in. I would like to use this latest and greatest thing. I would like to maybe do a SignalR project on this next thing. It's not necessarily required, but that might be a good use case. Are you opposed to doing that? You know, I'm not going to look to waste anybody's time. So, you know, if I get in too deep and figure out that this is just going to be a huge waste of time or money, then I'm going to back out and deliver on the value that I promised. But, you know, I'm in a much better place to make that argument that, you know, I've delivered value before and consistently for that matter. I'd like to play a little bit on this feature.
Yeah, I think of actually some of the Uncle Bob videos that he talks about, and he talks about sort of the slope. I don't know if I don't remember if he named it, but he talks about like so the sort of like slope of decaying productivity, right? As you bring on more people and business sort of like throws more money into these failing projects, and they're failing because someone is doing bad processes, and the business wonders, do you even have control of your own software, right? We have put you in charge of writing the software. You can't even deliver that value until you can kind of govern yourself and be able to say, yeah, I've done the things that I need to do to sort of prove that I can deliver. And that this is, you know, following things like test-driven development, implementing like proper patterns and practices, and, you know, using iterative changes to be able to improve the design that's existing there, and not having to sort of say, hey, let's start all over. This is a greenfield project. We have to start over in order to get better, right? Making those sort of changes, then you can start saying, hey, look, we're delivering in this way. Let's get your processes right. Show that you're competent. Show that you can do what is right and what is good. Then the business, I think, would gladly listen to you. I mean, they hired you to be the expert in the first place, but if they have no trust that you can actually do the job, they're not going to listen.
Yeah, if you go into a room and say, I made a mess, can I start over? they're going to lose all
faith.
They'll
say, sure.
Let's get a tiger team together and whiteboard it out.
On that, though, right? So, like, you have a team of developers, right? I don't know, you've got 5 developers. And they're told that there's a new project and the business wants it done in 6 months. And the team goes, okay, I think we can do that. The developers work on the project. They get it done in 6 months. Great. So now the business hires 3 more developers and says, hey, we've got another project. We want it done in 3 months. And developers go, but we got to train these guys. Well, no, we don't have time for that. We need this project done. We really need this project done. It needs to be done like in 3 months. And the developers go, that's going to be really hard. Okay. And so the developers cut some corners. Not only because they're, you know, feeling the pressure, but also because there's new people. And the new people don't know the process. They don't know the patterns. They don't know, you know, the agreement that the previous team had. But they get it done in 3 months. And so then the business goes, that's awesome. Hey, we've got another project. We need it done in 6 weeks. We've hired 3 more developers. So this should make it pretty easy. And at that point, I feel like the developers have lost control. Now half the developers are essentially new. The patterns that the you know, relatively new developers have learned have been bad patterns because there was a crunch. And they're going to pass on those bad patterns and pick up even worse patterns from the newest developers. Meanwhile, the original team of developers, two of those guys quit because they couldn't take the you know, the short deadlines and the pressure and the sloppy code that's being generated because of the pressure. I don't know if you've experienced this. I feel like you have. I certainly have. At what point does the team just need to fail?
Yeah, so my thoughts on this are that teams are immutable. So once you add or subtract from that team, that's a new team. So you've reset the scoreboard at that point. I'm assuming that in your scenario there, that the three projects were all similar size, similar scope, just for ease of numbers, right?
Yeah, yeah. More developers, shorter deadline, and people aren't trained. And the businesses keep doing this. They're like, well, they got that one done. I'll shorten the deadline even closer and see what happens.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to, as soon as the team dynamic changes, reset the scoreboard, it's time to have those conversations again. So it's back to, in those initial conversations, we need to raise our hand and say, I object, I have strong thoughts and opinions on this. We cannot commit to this. I understand there's a deadline, and we need to figure out what the most important things on in scope are. And we will commit to delivering the top three, right?
Now we'll come up with something creative. It'll be good. It'll be fine. We've added more developers,
right?
In fact, you're now outnumbered by the new developers who are willing to do anything to keep their paycheck. I mean, it's a realistic scenario, though.
Well, yeah. No, it's exactly what happens. And I think that, I guess, what I mean by we, the developers, I'm sort of also including them in that team, right? And you have to, I think it's our responsibility to, as developers who might be willing to stand up and being able to be vocal and say those things, but say that in front of the business, but also teach the younger developers to say, look, we can't do this. Like this will create issues, and this will create problems, and then sort of keep the hands away so that it's not, it isn't my hands that are making the mess. I will not be complicit in that mess that's made. If it's going to fail, you'll fail on your own.
Right. So then in development, it's relatively easy to find a new job. So do you die on that sword if need be?
I think so.
I think it's worthwhile to have those conversations. You know, we're all relatively senior in our various organizations. You know, I know from working with both of you, we all do a good job. So I think it's worth the effort to say, you know, I've delivered in the past. I'm concerned about value. I'm concerned about quality. You know, we need to have these conversations. We need to make these difficult decisions. We need business buy-in and say, we cannot cut these corners. You will not like the outcome. You're gonna, you know, we're gonna sacrifice quality. We're gonna sacrifice maintainability. We're gonna paint ourselves into a corner. So we need to have those conversations early on in the process so that we make sure that we don't end up in those very difficult situations.
I think the phrase is change a job or change a job, right? And you either do what you can to change the team, to change the business, but as a professional, if you believe that this can't be something that is right, I think you can't be complicit in it. Otherwise, you're not professional, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's back to builders, not bricklayers, right? We want to make sure that we are building something, that we are engineers, we're architects. Each and every developer is an architect to some extent, right? We're all designing some type of solution, whether it's for a method or for an entire application. So, you know, we have the requirement of ourselves and of the project and our teams to say, this is how we deliver good software.
So I think when we're looking at solutions, I think some of the important pieces are sort of opening up communication between the business and the lowest developers. I think one area where you get a bad experience is when we start creating a lot of different layers in channels, are you in the need to know situation? And so basically being able to sort of open up that process where the guy who's writing the code understands why he's writing the code. And then he can have also the feedback opportunities to say, hey, this is an idea that I have. You told me, hey, we would like to write this, put a button right here, but I have an idea that would possibly be better because I know technically what's possible. And you didn't know that when you said, hey, we need to put a button right here so that someone could do this. Then it takes you away from being a code monkey and into that situation of saying, I can build a solution to solve the problem. And so I think those are the two pieces, like the information flowing down and the channel for feedback flowing back up, are one of the key alleviations to kind of really allowing this to happen.
Yeah, I much prefer to work on software development teams, you know, and where it's everyone, including the intern developer, to the most senior architect, to the QA folks, to the product owners. I want everybody on the same page agreeing to the quality, valuable item that we're delivering this day, this sprint, this month, this year.
That would be nice.
I think that being said also means you have to have small teams. Because it's if the teams, as they get larger, it becomes more difficult to get everyone onto that same page. And that's sort of one of the problems. And then that's when it does require you to have a lot of sort of variety of developers, because you can't just simply throw like five junior developers and one senior developer and say, here, go to town. Because what ends up happening is they sort of all bottleneck that senior developer. And then he ends up doing all of the design resources and just delegating out monkey work to the juniors. And so you need people at various levels to be able to kind of pair and work together. And it's those mid-levels, I think, that are so difficult to find.
That's because nobody hires them. We only hire senior developers.
Yeah, well, everyone's racing to become that senior developer, right? There isn't that mid level, which is such an important role, and there's a certain it's really difficult to understand what to define that role and to understand who is there. And probably most, I would say, the vast majority of many of the senior developers that we have are really just mids, right?
Don't tell them that.
which is okay. It is totally okay. And it's a good thing. And it's really but we need to find a way to promote that and find a way to say it's okay to be mid. It's actually really beneficial to teams to have solid mid-level developers.
Yeah, that's really a huge issue in the developer space, is that there's only three levels. And you only have to be working for 3 years to get to the top level. So there's a huge variety of senior developers, all the way down from the really inexperienced senior developer to the super experienced senior developer that can solve any problem that you throw at them. I really wish there were more levels of developer, or that there was checkbox criteria for what it meant to be a certain type of developer at a certain level.
All right. Well, before we wrap up, do we have any, why don't we go around the table here and just offer some words of wisdom or any advice?
Don't forget to drink your Ovaltine.
Ash, what about you?
Yeah, well, so I would say as a developer, as a junior developer or a mid developer, maybe we'll just kind of stay on that topic. Two things. The number of years that you have been working does not necessarily equate to the experience level that you have. And it's really difficult to measure. There's it's very difficult for us to measure sort of the, like Clayton was saying, the check boxes of all the things that you know, but you can learn from other people that are around you, and that can improve the experience that you have without necessarily you having to go through the years, those years of experience. So you can act and behave like a higher level developer than the years of experience that you have. And the second thing would be the converse to that, the senior developer who has 15 years of experience, but it's 15 of year two. You've only been doing the same thing for 15 years. You really don't have 15 years of experience. Go out, learn, and figure out, you know, improve yourself so that you can actually contribute and find out actually that the people that have less experience have different ideas, and technology has changed, and the solutions that may have not been possible or good before, they're now maybe that's the better solution nowadays.
Yeah, building on that, I would say always be learning, and don't be afraid to learn from you know, from others. Don't be so concerned with years of experience or perceived levels of experience, because I inevitably have learned more from the young, whether that be age or years in the industry. I've learned more from those younger developers almost exclusively or almost explicitly more than those in more years.
Yeah, my real advice to build on top of that one is something I learned in the Army was learn some of the job of the person above you and the person below you. So that was in regards to rank. But if you tilt it just a little bit in the developer world, the person below you is the person that your code goes to after you. So learn something from your QA people. Ask them how they QA. Learn how to do QA yourself if you don't already know how. And the person above you is the business analyst or the product owner, because that's where the requirements come from. So learn some of their job too. That way you understand where they're coming from, the troubles that they have to go through in order to bring you the thing that you're trying to work on, and also the issues that QA people have when you just throw your code at them and they have to go and figure out how to test it. It might help to be sympathetic to, you know, their issues as well.
All right. Very good advice. And of course, dear listener, we'd love to hear from you. So if you have your own thoughts on the matter, then leave us a comment below or tweet at us or get in touch with us some way.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at SixFigureDev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.